the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
Well, how long have you been married to that nice man?
We're coming to our 10th anniversary.
Wow. Did you meet him in South Africa or did you meet him in the UK?
I met him online.
No, you didn't, girl. You done met, we're on the Edge Brains. We had a little green room conversation. Wait, you met him online?
Yes, I met him online.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Okay, so I got divorced. And then, you know, when you're divorced, you are bored or you are aching. And I think the problem was my ex divorced me because he had found someone younger than me. And I was like, I'm going to do one better over him. So I joined this dating site. And yeah, I met him. You know, I met him and we talked for one day. The following evening, he's like, can you marry me? And I'm like, exactly. That's as it was. I said, are you mad? You don't know me and I don't know you. He's like, I know what I want. Will you marry me? So I said, okay, I'm going to think about it. I was like, eh. So the following day, he's like, have you thought about what I asked you? So I said, okay, I will come and visit you. I will take a holiday from my job. I'll come and visit you. And if we click, then we'll take it from there. So because obviously I got a longer holiday from work, I came to the UK, visited him. He was a nice guy. Then, yeah.
He must have been more than nice. He must have put it down for the underground, honey, because you done married him. Well, wait a minute. Wait. Now, was your first husband black?
Yeah, my first husband was black.
Okay, and so now you fell in love with a white man in the UK and went and married him. Well, what did your ex-husband say? I know he was just outside of himself.
He was like going telling people, I don't know what she is doing, blah, blah, blah. Don't think this will last. There we are.
What? Is he still with that young woman?
No. He is married the third time now.
He's been married for the third time.
Three times after me.
What? See, Brains, that's what happens. We give you a candid conversation here in the green room on the Edge. Yeah. My guest today is Sasa Evans. She is calling all the way from the UK, originally from South Africa. And I had to get the scoop on this. I mean, that was really amazing because I know people. You know, I had one guest on my show that met somebody online. She was 84 years old. And he catfished her out of $500,000.
Oh, my word.
So you know what catfishing is when they pretend that they're somebody that they're not. And he was a nice man, African man. That had a German accent, girl. She thought he was from Germany. I said, well, did he sex text you? Or what in the world happened? She said, oh, no, you can't do any of that. So I'm glad to know that there is love online. And I'm so glad to have you here with me. And you're going to talk about a little bit about your passion, how you turn your pain into your passion, being separated from your family, now living in the UK, originally from South Africa, what this whole COVID kerfuffle has done to you. But also done for you because you're a very spiritual woman. I want to thank you for being here with me on the Edge. Tell my Brains a little bit more about you, you know, being a school teacher and where your story began.
Okay. So, yeah, like I said, I came here and we got married and I've been living here ever since, but my family is still in South Africa and I've got a daughter and a grandson. And yeah, all my parents. And this COVID really has been a problem because my mom passed away last year in November and I couldn't even go because of travel restrictions. And even if I had wanted to go, the burial had to take place quickly because they didn't want a lot of people gathering and stuff like that. I don't know if you know, we African people, when there is a burial, we really do gather. So they discourage stuff like that, which is why the person has to be laid to rest very fast. So that really, really hurt me. I think it still hurt me. Yeah.
Imagine, you know, the hurt and the pain. I've got a 91-year-old mother, and I was telling you in the green room, I'm seeing her rapidly decline. Mm. And, I don't know what to do, but you know what I have done? I have a talk. Mm. We say our prayers together every night. Mm, and I have my come to Jesus meeting because I know in my heart that I'm a good daughter. And I have no regrets. Yes, as caregivers, we get tired. We get, exhausted. We don't know what to do. But that person that is ailing is also in pain. So you work with a lot of people that turn their pain into a purpose like you've done.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that and the spiritual work that you do.
Okay, so I saw it from my point of view. I know like the pain which I endured, especially because I was left by somebody I had been with since high school for a very younger version of me. So I had so much pain. I had so much baggage. But then I knew that if I don't get rid of that pain, that means this relationship I had gotten into wasn't going to work. Right. I first had to heal myself of that pain, forgive in order to give my relationship a chance. So that is what I support women with. If you are in pain, you have to look at your emotional side, because emotionally, you wake up all these emotions, stresses and hormones and so forth if you are hurting. And then also it affects you mentally. So it is very, very important to heal your pain so that you are free and you have that freedom to do things you like. You can't go into something new with the baggage or with the pain. And it's so difficult to be fulfilled if you are still hurting. So that's what I tell people. I teach them about forgiveness, how to forgive, and what forgiveness is and what forgiveness is not. Because some people struggle with forgiveness. They will think, okay, if I forgive, that means I am sort of like saying it's okay what the person did, but that's not what forgiveness is. You give forgiveness not even expecting somebody to accept it or somebody to forgive you, but you forgive to free yourself. So that's one of the things I teach. And then I also work with the women, use different techniques which they can even apply on their own, maybe years from now, if ever they get into the same situation. Mm.
So, it's not just women though, too. It's also men.
Yeah.
Because we focus on women and we think for some reason that women are, more tender and more vulnerable, but there's a lot of men out there that are experiencing pain and hurt people.
Mm. Oh, that is so true. That's so true, April.
Just an example, your ex-husband, he's still in pain and he's still hurting. Because he's going from one person to the next. He has, some pain within himself. So when you work with these people, you're also very spiritual. Do you bring in the element of God and in your teaching and you're working with them? Because, everybody's not with God.
I bring the element of God because forgiveness, really to forgive freely, you have to accept that there is someone who is greater than you, greater than whatever you are forgiving. And if you don't trust in God, if you don't have faith and hope in something, it's very difficult. So I bring that element to people. And because I found it really helped me. that faith in God. Whatever was happening, it gave me that peace, knowing that there is someone there who cares, mm-hmm. who understands how I feel, who can help me in this journey.
Right. And somebody that, you know, can rely on. And people, you know, they're afraid of religion. They're afraid that they will have to be submissive. They're afraid that they will not have control and they will not have free will and they will be beholden. But you know what? That is what we are all going to be accountable and responsible to someone for someone. Wouldn't you agree?
And I think people, we are always afraid of what we don't know. That is the thing. We don't, sometimes people don't try because they are afraid what is going to happen. That is exactly because we don't really, I think, tangibly know God. That can make people afraid. And I think in some ways, it is religion itself which sometimes make people be like that. It's how people are judged by people who are also in the church, which makes them like that. I believe you have to have faith in God, but not be religious. I think you know what I mean. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, because there are people that are at church and then there's people that's in church.
Exactly. You know? Yes.
And it's a difference. I always say that religion is your GPS, but spirituality is your destination. And, you know, I've experienced in my lifetime, I self-disclosed, I went through two or three different religious practices, one growing up as a child, one as I found in, you know, exploring who I was, and then one that I settled into as a person. But all those different doctrines came back to one source, came back to that one energy. To that one thing. And I just took a different road every time. So I encourage people to do that. But with that comes responsibility. I want to ask you a little bit about responsibility. I made a post. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but I made a post on one of my feeds. And you made a comment. And it was pretty much about this particular celebrity, you know, not giving back to their actual community, but serving the upper echelon for riches. Now, the reason why I bring that up is how much responsibility do you think that we have to take care of my brother or my sister?
I think, first of all, from the biblical point of view, you see that Jesus was more concerned about the poor. He was more concerned about the suffering. And even if you read Proverbs, it shows that God is concerned about us caring for other people, about us, if we are blessed, being a blessing to other people. What I was, I had beef with that celebrity was, I mean, it's like you are flouting your riches. You are doing all those extraordinary things which the very poor from where you come won't even be able to access or enjoy. Why not, you know, share? Of course, I wasn't saying he shouldn't do whatever he was doing,
right.
But we have this saying, charity begins at home.
Right. But along those same lines, I looked at it a little different. I kind of chuckled because I knew exactly where you were coming from. But this is an opportunity to create jobs, okay? To make people self-sustainable, to make something beautiful out of something that was probably an empty lot. So I see it both ways as how this person is doing it. Now, yeah, he's already got a lot of money and he's going to make a whole lot more money, but he's also creating the concept of teaching a man to fish so that he can live a lifetime. So I kind of looked at it and I wanted to ask you about that. I have been thinking about that for a while. And I totally get what you're saying because I'm very philanthropic. But there comes a point where I have to stop and I have to say, you know what? Do I always give that hand out or do I teach people how to pick themselves up by the bootstraps and create their own sustainability? And that's a lot with life, but that comes with pain. And pain, you know, it will It will destroy you if you let it, but if you allow it, it can also create great purpose, and you'll be able to do great things for people. So tell me a little bit about your coaching program that you're offering and what you are pouring into the clients you're working with.
Okay, so the program I have, it all starts with them healing from their pain and then looking at what they can do, you know, to use their pain into purpose. For instance, for me, first, when I was married, I had an ectopic pregnancy after my first child. And then second, I had an ectopic pregnancy and I also had a miscarriage. So I miscarried and they found I was carrying twins. And then 2 weeks later, I was back in hospital, had an ectopic pregnancy. So I didn't have any more, obviously, tubes. So I couldn't have any more children. But my heart, and coming from where I am, like from my tribe, when you have children, you are sort of like valued. So I wanted more children than one. In my family, my mom had 13 children. So
13?
Yes, 13. Wow. I always said we were a football team and my dad was a referee and all that, yeah. So I wanted more children, at least more than one. But I thank the Lord for the blessing of that one girl I had. But I found that instead of dwelling on this thing, why not help another child who can, maybe who is in difficulty, maybe whatever resources I was going to use for my other children, I can plant those resources into helping other children. So I joined a Compassion International and I've been sponsoring children ever since. And it's so fulfilling that I'm doing something. Now it's not even like I'm doing it because I wanted to have more children. It is a joy to be doing it. So my pain, painful as it was, gave me a purpose to do something good for and give, you know, a start in life for other people. Because some of those compassion children, you hear their stories, it's so heartwarming. You don't like just give them money, but money is used to put them through school for their health, medical, and for maybe helping at home, but putting them through school is the most important thing. Like at the moment, I've got one sponsored child in one African country. I took him when he was in the first grade. He's now doing the fifth grade. So it's really something.
And you build a relationship with them. You were in South Africa during apartheid, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What was that like? Yes.
It was hard. It was hard because it's hard when people don't understand each other, or when people despise or look down upon each other because they have different color of the skin and stuff like that. It's so hard. And I think in South Africa, the worst of it all was when we were forced to learn a language which we really, really couldn't understand. And now you're coming from your own home language and your own sub-language in your community. And then English, which you're learning at school, but now you're forced to learn a fourth difficult language. That was difficult. And people were not accorded the same opportunities as other people, jobs and positions. Yeah, it's a difficult life. You have to be strong.
But it did not harden your heart.
I think, of course it hurt, but it didn't harden my heart. When I see a person, I see an image of God. And I think that is what my faith helps me in that way. I see an image of God and I separate a person from an act. If, say, a person is a thief, I see that as an act, but that is not him. Maybe he did that because of something. So there is a person who is an image of God, and there is the act which he acted in, which he should be corrected. So yeah, it didn't harden my heart. I was more or less feeling sorry for them, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
What would you say to, you know, Black Americans right now? And I say that because we're going through it. You know, it's very difficult. And I speak freely here on the edge. I live in a community that has a large African population. Mm. And sometimes they're not very warm and inviting to me because I am not African. I am a Black American. There's a distinct difference. Brains, don't get it twisted. And then you've got the prejudice from white people. And then you've got the prejudice from other minorities. What would you say as a woman that lived through apartheid, moved to the United Kingdom, married a white man, you know, what would you say to us to kind of just get our SHIT together?
I mean, we should understand that first and foremost, we are a human race, all of us.
Absolutely.
There is no difference. We are a human race with different colors, but the bottom line, we are the same. We are people in that period. Yeah, I know it's so difficult. And have you realized, I don't know, maybe it happens to you, that people of your own color will discriminate you more than people of the other color? I find it here in the UK.
Okay, and I tell people, I said, you know what, you talk about white folks as racist. Black folks can be some of the most racist and separatist people I have ever met. And they feel freely to call out white people, but they never look at the reflection in the mirror and say, you know what, I have judged this person based on the color of their skin. And I have not given them an opportunity, and I have not loved them, and I have not trusted them, and I've looked at them with a side eye, or, you know, whatever the situation may be. So, you know, Black folks, y'all prejudice too.
There's a lot of prejudice in Black people. I remember when I was still at home, and, you know, you will see a Black person being a racist maybe to a white person, and you, like, try to point out, and they will say, I'm not a racist, I'm Black. I'm like... There's nothing like that. Racist doesn't go with color.
Right.
You are racist. Yeah. I think, I know, like, white people are, but I think we are the worst, to be honest. If we really look at ourselves, because we discriminate each other when we have the same skin, but we look at, is he person more paler than I am? Does the person speak English in a certain way? And then we discriminate. For instance, here, there are a lot of asylum seekers. So Black people were born here, and as Black people come from Africa and asylum seekers, we treat each other differently. The ones born here, obviously, they have more right than some of us, and the ones who are asylum seekers, depending on which part of Africa they come, are they very, very dark, or they are the worst of the worst? But we are all Black. Right. So prejudice is everywhere. It doesn't matter color or whatever. People are prejudiced.
And again, we come in every shade. I mean, I just look at the rainbow. If every color was the same, it'd be pretty boring, you know? And it is time for us to go deeper. Again, yeah. I don't like when people say, oh, I don't see color, because they're like, you know, I don't want to be translucent. I don't want you to look right through me, but I want you to appreciate who I am, my struggle, my difference, my food, my language, you know, my love, you know, my culture, all of these things. I want that. I don't want that to be the dividing line. There's too many other things that we could divide up, you know, and try to get it together, but they just, I don't know. And, you know, that is the big ticket item here. You know, they want the racial divide. My dear friend Jane Elliott says that, you know, white people are afraid that they are going to lose power because they are going to become the minority and we are going to seek revenge. We don't have time for that. If we were the barbaric beast that, you know, people perceive us to be, we should have had this handled a long time ago. Wouldn't you agree?
Okay, yeah, I do agree. I was just going to say to you, look at South Africa. We are the majority. We took power. But did we do anything to them? Instead, we initiated a reconciliation. Yeah.
You did. And to try to bring people together. So how are things in South Africa these days? I know, you know, Mandela, that was, he was amazing. But what's going on with the government now? Are people still staying in that same trajectory, or is there corruption now? What are you seeing going on?
Have been away for a long time. That means whatever I will say, maybe hearsay. But obviously there is corruption here and there. There is corruption. But all in all, I think things are more improved for everybody, not only the black people, but also the white people. Of course, there are still so many difficulties, especially for black people. And I always think you can't like erase 400 years of oppression in just 10 years. Right. We have to work at it. And there has to be that willingness, even from ourselves, because obviously we are the ruling party, we are the majority. We have to have that willingness to bring up others. If we don't do that, then it's us who have failed. We can't blame other people. But I believe we are getting there. Mm-hmm. We are getting there. There's a lot to be done, but we are getting there.
Well, again, like I said, at least people are open to the dialogue. They're sharing the country. They're sharing the land. And there's wonderful people like you that are turning pain into purpose.
Into purpose, yeah.
So tell my brains how to get in contact with you. You know, I'm sure that there are ways that they can support. Maybe you have your philanthropic arm that you are supporting these children. Maybe one of my brains wants to be a blessing. And support them too. So how do they get in contact with you?
I've got a website. So sasaevans.com. That's most of what I'm doing can be found there. But if somebody is interested in doing this course with me, this coaching course with me, they can get in touch at sasaevans.com/pain campaign. I'm like on a railroad campaigning about this pain. I want, you know, us to come out of this 2021 in a better place or in a better position. So at the moment I'm running this challenge, pain campaign, so that people can work at all these things which are troubling them. And coupled with COVID, which has even made things worse. So we really need this more than ever.
I know. And again, brains, wear a mask. You know, they're not doing it to take away your civil liberties. They're doing it to try to contain this bug.
Exactly.
And it's just like the devil, Sasa. It's an invisible enemy, but it's looming in the air. I want to thank you so much for being here on The Edge with me and my brains. You are beautiful. We have really had a spirited conversation about, you know, not race relations, but human relations. How we can learn to love one another. Again, I have to tell my brains, there's a picture of her husband taking her corn rolls, a white man taking his corn rolls and brushing her hair. And I thought that was so beautiful because he immersed himself down to your root. You know, and he loved it. And that's a beautiful thing. And if we can just try to come together, at least understand, you don't necessarily have to be my best friend, but you ain't gonna bother me neither. Don't bother me. So love me. And I love you. Thank you for being so much on the being here with me and my brains on the edge. Come back and visit. Let me know when that book is finished, because I know that it's going to be a lot of great things in there.
Thank you, April. Thank you for having me. I really have enjoyed this.
Well, thank you. And tell your husband I said hi.
Oh, I will tell him. I will tell him. Yeah. Oh, brains, thank you for listening to me. And I hope we can realize we are just a human race. We are one race with beautiful colors.
That's right. Bye.
Bye.